Pay attention, son. This is for your own good.
This is Gateway City Sports.
You got to get it done.
This is Talking Sports on the Bleachers
with Don Glenn.
A confident young man, a superb athlete.
A look at the sports issues of the day.
Holy cow!
Grab a seat, pop a cold one, and let's talk some sports.
Gee, that sounds kind of interesting.
There's a drive into left center field. That ball is going to be out of here. It's gone. It's 7-15. There's a new home run champion of all time, and it's Henry Aaron.
Hello, fans. College football is here, and that means it's tailgate season here also. So to kick it off, if you will, we're going to go to the parking lot today and not be in the stands. So pull up your web chair, grab a hot dog or a brat, and the cooler is right over there. So let's talk some sports.
Gentlemen, start your engine.
Here's the snap. Romo looking, dumps it off right side. Intercepted! Intercepted at the goal line by Woodson! And there is your dagger!
The rumors are true.
You don't understand. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody.
Crying? There's no crying! There's no crying in baseball! Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs?
British young Cinderella has come out of nowhere. He's got about 350 yards. He's going to hit about a 500 yard strike, don't you think? He's got a beautiful dash.
He got all of that one.
Dad? You want to have a catch? I'd like that.
Welcome back, fans, to this three-ring circus I call Talking Sports on the Bleachers. I'm Don Glenn, the head ringmaster. Alrighty, one quick little program note before we get started. I had intended to have the A-Train Arlington Lane, but due to some scheduled conflicts, we couldn't make that happen just yet. We're still working on it, so give me some time. I really want to get him on because I think you guys are going to enjoy hearing from him. So, also, I'm making a small little format change. The first part of the show is still going to be about general news, but I'm going to take and make this kind of a three-part show. The second part is going to be NCAA related, Big Ten, Illinois, SEC, Missouri, and the third segment of the show will be St. Louis related, Blues, Cardinals, possibly even the Battle Hawks as we get going there. I think a couple years or another year from now, maybe it's next year. I think it is the soccer. Major League Soccer. So we're going to start working on something like that. Excuse me, that respect. But I'll be working on more of the guests for the show as well. And I'm also looking to possibly do a part-time or, if it works out, a full-time co-host. A little more on that later. So, Talking Sports on the Bleachers is a proud member of Gateway City Sports. And at Gateway City Sports, you will find sports content involving sports in and around the St. Louis Bi-State area. Yes, sir, from the Blues, Battlehawks, and Cardinals to the Missouri Tigers and the Fighting Illini. We have a team of writers and contributors posting articles and news bites. You can also find other podcasts like the Team of Rivals with Ron Nuttall, Pete Geddes, and Elliot Dewey. They talk Cardinals and Cubs and a little Hollywood. The Derek King Sports Show and more are coming. Give us a look-see. If there is some sport you like and we do not cover that sport, let us know. And we're going to see what we can do about that for you. All right, so let's do some big news going, big news stories that are going on in the world of golf. LIV has struck again, this time luring the current number two player on the PGA Tour, Cameron Smith. And not only is Smith a big prize being the number two player in the PGA, but he's also the reigning Tournament of Champions winner, Players Championship winner, and Open Championship winner. Yeah, not opium, Open. Open Championship winner. Smith will play in the LIV event in Boston, and ESPN reports that Mark Leishman, Harold Varner III, Joaquin Neiman, and Cameron Tringale, Anirban Lahiri, will be joining Smith in Boston. Now, Mito Pereira is not playing in Boston, but he is also rumored as jumping to LIV. This comes as earlier in the week, the PGA announced that it would be making changes that would include 13 elevated events with larger pool purses and a doubling of player impact program bonus. This is an obvious effort to compete with the lucrative LIV golf pay scale, but even this is much less than what the public investment fund can put up. And the public investment fund is... as I've mentioned before, is part basically an extension of the Saudi Arabian government. So trying to outfund them or outpay them is going to be a tall task. And now for something more positive, though, on the PGA Tour, Rory McIlroy won the 2022 Tournament of Champions and captured his third career FedEx Cup. Anyway, he's also the first golfer to earn more than $30 million in 1 year. Yeah, $30 million in 1 year. And the first to win five times in a PGA Tour season since Justin Thomas did it just 5 years ago in 2017. McIlroy came from six shots back at the start of Sunday play. Scottie Scheffler, who had to lead the entire tournament, had his worst round, a 3 over 73, while McIlroy would shoot a 4 under 66. McIlroy would catch and pass Scheffler in the last three holes of the final round. Some NFL news. It was widely thought that Jimmy Garoppolo would be traded by the 49ers to help usher in the Trey Lance era in Frisco. But even as though as he was linked to a number of different teams, Seattle and Cleveland, the Jets, no move came forward. And with just a little over a week before the first game, the 49ers and Garoppolo came up with a deal to keep the quarterback in the city by the bay. Garoppolo took a huge, and I'm talking huge, folks, pay cut. He was due to make $24 million a year. He settled for a contract for a reworked one-year deal worth only $6.5 million. Now, there are incentives that if he does play, because as I said, this is going to be Trey Lance's team, and don't make no bones about that. But if he does play, say Lance gets hurt or has a bad performance and they're forced to put Garoppolo in, he could make up to $18 million this year. Now, the deal also comes with a no-trade and no-tag clause. Now, this means basically he has the right to veto any trade that they work up involving him, and the 49ers cannot tag him at the end of the season as a franchise player to keep him around for a year. And I don't know why they would do that, again, though, unless, Lance just doesn't work out. There's that deal. Now, actually, you would think this is a shrewd move, though, by both parties, because, this does settle Garoppolo for a year. He now has a year to contemplate where he's going to go, because he will be a free agent. You can bank on that one. And the 49ers also now have an a talented, experienced, a playoff experienced, actually, backup for Lance. So, you know, this is kind of good for both team or both parties. Although I think that also makes Garoppolo an easier trade target if they find somebody he would want to be traded to. You know, somebody can pick up a nice quarterback for $6.5 million for this year and then take their chances next year. Not a bad deal for either team. Or either side, I should say. Roster cuts were made to get to the final 53-man NFL teams, and there were some interesting decisions. when I say interesting, I mean interesting, folks. When the Dallas Cowboys cut all three backup quarterbacks. So right now, the only quarterback they have, or as of, I think it was Wednesday, the only quarterback they had on their roster is Dak Prescott. Now, there is the thought that they will re-sign, or they will sign, I should say, one of those three backups they released, but they want to wait until they can move some veterans from the injured reserve list. So, with only a few days left before the start of the season, look for a decision on that quickly. The Vikings drafted quarterback Kellen Mond, linebacker Chaz Surratt, and guard Wyatt Davis in the third round of the 2021 draft, just last year. Now, all three of those players have something else in common. They were all cut by the Vikings this year. there's an oddity for you. The Saints traded defensive back Chauncey Gardner-Johnson plus an even round pick in 25 to the Philadelphia Eagles. For the Eagles' fifth round pick in 23 and the worst of two round picks in 24. So I'm trying to figure this one out. They get the fifth round pick next year and the worst of the two sixth round picks that the Eagles have, and they traded a defensive back and an even round pick in 25. This is scratching my head to think of what the hell they were smoking to make that deal. The Jacksonville Jaguars released Laquan Treadwell. I look for him to show up somewhere and be a big contributor for somebody. I'll have some more thoughts on all this next week, ahead of the first NFL game on Thursday night, hopefully. I'm taping this on Friday night, Saturday morning, so it's going to be a quick turnaround, but we'll see what we can get done. Now for some U.S. Open news. And, of course, what happened at the Australian Open to Novak Djokovic, who was not allowed to participate, happened again, this time at the U.S. Open, as he was the Serbian tennis star's unvaccinated status was going to keep him off the courts in Flushing Meadows. Tonight, Serena Williams ended her journey for her 24th major and her tennis career. This was to be her last tournament. It was in the third round of the U.S. Open at Arthur Ashe Stadium Court. Now, she did win her first two matches, 6-3, 6-3 in the first round over Danka Kovinic, and then she beat the two-seed Anna Kontaveit 7-4, 2-6, 6-2. Now get this, she's 18-6 when facing a higher seed in the U.S. Open. Not a bad little record you got right there, I'm telling you. Her third round match, Magic, as I said, did fail. She faced unseeded Ayla Tamjanovic. Tamjanovic managed to topple Williams 7-5, 6-7, 6-1. Now, this is also the earliest exit in the U.S. Open since 1998, when Williams was only 16. I think Serena Williams will always be remembered in tennis circles as a fierce competitor and one of the toughest players you're ever going to face on the court. She's second in the all-time majors list at 23, one behind the legendary Margaret Court, who owns the 24 that she was chasing. Now, people apply the acronym GOAT, or greatest of all time, to many athletes. And I think Serena Williams is one who definitely fits that description of a GOAT. In other open news, last year's women's singles champ, Emma Raducanu, was upset in her first-round match by Elise Cornette, 6-3, 6-3. Two-time champ Naomi Osaka, was defeated in her first-round match by Danielle Collins, 7-6, 6-3. On the men's side, Rafael Nadal needed four sets to get past his first-round match against Riki Hajinka, losing the first set 4-6 and then going 6-2, 6-3, 6-3. Now, all these high-level events can lead to a lot of stress. You know, but there's one thing that doesn't have to be stressful, and that's buying a car from Fifth Street Motors. See, at Fifth Street Motors, they will help you find the car you need no matter what the brand. At Fifth Street Motors, they believe in giving you the best price on a pre-owned vehicle that fits your budget. So give Brandon or Don a call today at 573-259-1306. That's 573-259-1306. And be sure to tell them Talking Sports on the Bleachers sent you. Now, hey, who's ready for some college football? Well, ready or not, it's here, folks. Now, this past weekend, or last weekend, I should say, was week zero, as they call it, with only a few games on the docket, including a couple of early conference matchups. Now, in one of those, Nebraska played Northwestern in Ireland. This is the second year in a row that the Huskers opened up with a conference opponent, as last year they lost to Illinois 30-22 in Champaign. Now, unlike last year, however, the Huskers seem to have the game in hand, they had two score leads twice, let both of those slip away, and lost 31-28. Now, after last year's 3-9 season and a change of quarterback and offensive coordinator, fans looked for a new era. But it just hasn't happened, or doesn't seem to be happening yet. I mean, with the loss to Northwestern. So you're looking at Scott Frost, who was on the hot seat last year. That seat got a little hotter. He's 15-29 coming into this season and 10-25 in Big Ten play. He has never had a winning season in Lincoln, and the most telling stat is he's 5-21 in one score games. That's right, folks. 26 games, which have been decided by one score or less, they are 5-21, or Nebraska is 5-21 under Scott Frost. Things don't change pretty quick, and they don't get some meaningful wins over there. I'm not even sure Scott Frost will make the end of the season. I'm not going to predict that yet, but all signs indicate that there will be a coaching change one way or another in Nebraska, despite a minor miracle. In the other conference opener, North Texas defeated UTEP 31-13. North Texas quarterback Austin Oon, 16 of 29 for 236 yards and 3 touchdowns, while UTEP quarterback Gavin Hardinson went 21 of 48 for 293 yards and a touchdown. Trin Smith had 7 catches for 127 yards and a touchdown. Other games of note on Saturday, there was the first matchup of an SEC team at Hawaii, and Vanderbilt rolled in that one, 63-10. The Fighting Illini were action on week zero, hosting the Cowboys of Wyoming. They won the game handily, 38-6, scoring in the first 41 seconds of the game. Running back Chase Brown was the offensive rushing attack, basically, for Illinois. Rushing for 151 yards and 2 touchdowns. He also had 3 catches for 16 yards and a touchdown. New quarterback Tommy DeVito, the transfer from Syracuse, was an efficient 27 of 37 for 192 yards and 2 TD passes. Chase Brown also was able to surpass the 2,000-yard rushing mark for his career on an 18-yard run in the second quarter. He becomes the 19th Illini running back to rush for 2,000 yards in a career. Now, after the game, New Illinois quarterback Tommy DeVito had this to say about his offensive line. I'm not taking any shots here, but I think this is the first game that I've ever been in where I did not get sacked. The offensive line was a concern with new players. being switched, or new players on the line, and players being switched around from one side to the other. But you can attribute what the line was able to do by the leadership provided by senior tackle Alex Palcheski. He's made his 53rd career start, the most for an offensive lineman at Illinois, edging out current Minnesota Viking Vidarian Lowe. New offensive coordinator Barry Leonard Jr. kept Wyoming on their toes, speeding up the tempo, going no huddle at times to keep pressure on Wyoming defensive front. The Illinois defense was stout as well, as the Cowboys only converted one of 12 third down attempts. Wyoming quarterback Andrew Peasley connected on only 6 of 21 passing attempts. Rushing, however, they were able to run the ball against Illinois, as Titus Swinn rushed for 98 yards on 17 carries, and quarterback Peasley added 76 yards on only 8 attempts. Now, week one started Thursday night, and the featured bout was the Big Ten matchup of Penn State and Purdue. It was a back-and-forth ball game. Penn State had early control of the game and led at the half, 21-10. Two TDs by the Boilers in the third quarter gave them the lead. Penn State got the lead back in the fourth, but Purdue took a lead on a 72-yard pick six by Chris Jefferson. Then with only 2 minutes and 22 seconds left on the clock, the Nittany Lions put together an 80-play drive for a score with a minute 25 left. The defense held, and Penn State got the win. Penn State quarterback Sean Clifford was 20 of 37 for 282 yards, four TDs, and a pick. Rushing-wise, they didn't have a big rusher, but they had a balanced set of rushers, three rushers going 30 yards or more, with Nicholas Singleton, 10 carries, 31 yards, Katron Allen, 8 carries, 31 yards, and Kevon Lee, 9 carries for 30 yards. Mitchell Tinsley was the main receiving target, 11 targets, 7 catches for 84 yards and a touchdown. Brenton Strange added 2 catches for 77 yards and a touchdown, while Keandre Lambert-Smith caught 4 passes, 56 yards, 1 touchdown. Purdue stats went like this. Adian O'Connell, 30 of 59, 365 yards and a touchdown. King Doru, 15 carries, 57 yards, 2 touchdowns. And Charlie Jones on the receiving side was 19 targets, 12 catches for 153 yards and a touchdown. Other games of note on Thursday, number 17 Pitt beat West Virginia 38-31. C.J. Donaldson had 125 yards on 7 carries. Central Michigan gave number 12 Oklahoma State a contest but lost 58-44. Both quarterbacks threw for 400 yards. Richardson for Central Michigan, 36 of 49, 424 yards and 4 touchdowns. And Sanders of Oklahoma State, 28 for 41 with 406 yards and 4 TDs. And for my Missouri fans, Missouri rolled Louisiana Tech, or La Tech as they call it, 52-24. All the Tigers' touchdowns were by the run. No passing touchdowns. Nathaniel Pete, 9 carries, 77 yards and a TD. Cody Schrader, 16 carries, 67 yards, a TD. Brady Cook, the quarterback, 7 carries on his own for 61 yards and a touchdown. B.J. Harris, 4 carries, 19 yards and a TD. Luther Burden, the third, 4 carries, 31 yards and 2 TDs. Cook threw for only 193 yards, completing only 16 of 26 passes, and had 1 interception. La Tech had a combined 339 yards passing and 3 scores from their 2 quarterbacks. Matthew Downing, 21 of 35 for 197 yards, 1 touchdown, but 3 interceptions. Parker McNeil was 7 of 11 for 142 yards and 2 scores. Week 1 Illinois game was tonight at Indiana. Illinois was out to establish a run. They did that, putting up 95 yards in the first quarter. Indiana did take an early lead on a field goal. Illinois countered with a touchdown. Indiana countered with another touchdown. And Illinois lost a touchdown. And it was clearly a catch. Brian Hightower came down with a Danny DeVito pass. Came down in the end zone. Had the ball in his arms. The defender had an arm in there, but didn't get control of the ball. Both men go to the ground, and as they got up, the ball came loose, and the side judge or the end zone referee, whoever it was, decided that was an incomplete pass. It was reviewed and held up, and I don't understand this. Even the announcers on the game were saying that was a touchdown, clear and simple. I don't know what's going to happen there, but if I was Brett Bielema, there would be a letter going to the not only the Big Ten office, but the NCAA office and anybody else I could get to listen, because that was just a tragedy of stupidity, if you want to ask me. But anyway, the half ended 16-10 in favor of Indiana in the third quarter. A touchdown pass. This time, Hightower got credit for a touchdown on a pass from DeVito. And that would be the only score in the third quarter, but giving Illinois a 17-16 lead. Now, in the fourth quarter, at about the 10-minute mark, Illinois was on the one-yard line. They were first and goal for six. They had started it with about 4 minutes, or 14 minutes into the for the fourth quarter, to go into fourth quarter. So they just about, first possession of fourth quarter. Got it down to, like I said, 10-minute mark. They were first and goal to six. Three rushes later, one by Dana DeVito, two by Chase Brown. Illinois was now at the, it was fourth and one. They elected to go for another rush by Chase Brown, and it lost 3 yards, giving the Hoosiers the ball at their own four. Now, later, Coach Bielema said, that fourth down call, that's on me to make a better decision. I thought we could go up two scores, and we failed. Now, that call would loom is almost as large, if not larger, than the touchdown pass that was disallowed. I mean, it's the best way I can put it. Illinois would make it a four-point game, though, with a 48-yard field goal by Caleb Griffin, his longest of the year, to make it 20-16 with 2:16 on the clock. Indiana started with their own 25 and marched down the field, and with 23 seconds left, Sean Shivers, who actually led to Illinois' first touchdown by a fumble, would take the ball into the end zone from 1 yard out and give Indiana the 23-20 lead, which would be the final score. Now, the 75 yards gained in that one series of plays at the end of the game was more than Indiana had in the entire second half up to that point. They had 70 yards in the second half up to that drive, and then 75 yards in one drive. Tommy DeVito was 21 of 35 for 232 yards, two TDs, one pick. Chase Brown was the U of I rushing attack, as he was against Wyoming. 36 carries, 199 net yards. Second time in a row he has topped the 100-yard mark. Actually, second time he's topped the 150-yard mark this season in two games. Isaiah Williams was the big-time receiver with 9 catches for 112 yards and a touchdown. Brian Hightower added 4 catches for 43 yards and a touchdown. Pat Bryant also added 43 yards on 2 catches. For Indiana, they lived by the pass with Connor Bazelak, 28 of 52 for 330 yards and a touchdown and a pick. Rushing-wise, they had a net 32 yards for the entire game, for the entire team, a net 32 rushing yards. Sean Sivers had 15 carries for 28 yards and one score. Cam Camper caught 11 passes for 156 yards. DJ Matthews hauled in 7 passes for 109 yards and a touchdown. You know, it's a disappointing ending to the game for Illinois, and it's reminiscent of a number of games last year when they were in the game right near the end or in the last part of the quarter or whatever, and for some unexplainable reason, well, other than the fact that it was just what happened, but for some reason they would lose a game on the last play or the last series or late in the game. So of course, Illinois was without running back Josh McCray, who was injured in the Wyoming game. His status is still undecided. Okay, on Saturday, there's a few good games, a number of good games actually, but there are a few of these top ones. In a battle of ranked teams, Oregon, number 11, travels to Atlanta to take on number 3, Georgia. Number 23, Cincinnati, goes to number 19, Arkansas, in an unranked game, but a conference game that's going to be, I think, pretty cool. San Diego State hosts Arizona. And probably the premier contest of Saturday is going to be number 2, Ohio State, entertaining number 5, Notre Dame. That should be the good game, folks. Check your local listings, check all those out. On Sunday, LSU will play Florida State. That should be a good game. And on Monday, number 4, Clemson travels to Atlanta to take on Georgia Tech. Now, you know, Tommy DeVito mentioned and praised his offensive line's protection. And protection is key in football. Now, we all know it's also important to stay protected in life. Because sometimes life takes that unexpected path like a bouncing football. And that's why you need Allstate. The Wiley Group has 2 locations in Festus and Arnold to serve you. They offer home, auto, boat, motorcycle, business, life insurance, investments, and much more. They offer a customized approach that's unique to your situation to make sure you and your family and your assets are properly protected, just like a good offensive line protects a quarterback. They also offer great rates and savings, so give Sean and his team a call today, 636-764-6294. That's 636-764-6294. They'll help you with an insurance quote right over the phone. Even give them a call if you just want to talk sports, because you know what? They do that too. I'm tempted to call them one day and talk sports. We all have busy lives, so you can email Sean at Sean Wiley at allstate.com and talk to him about your coverage options. And remember, you're always in good hands with Allstate. All right, let's talk some Cardinal baseball. And the first thing that has been pretty much all season now is how awesome Paul Goldschmidt is. I mean, for crying out loud, the guy has been phenomenal. He's closing in on not only the MVP award, but the Triple Crown as well. And for those of you that don't know, the Triple Crown is the person who, at the end of the season, leads the league in home runs, RBIs, and batting average. So right now he's in that hunt. Now it's something that hasn't been done in the National League since 1937. 85 years. He's doing something that hasn't been done in 85 years. The last person to do it, Joe Medwick of the St. Louis Cardinals. So how fitting would that be that the next person that breaks it is a Cardinal? And I didn't know this until I looked it up, but getting the Triple Crown in the National League has only happened 4 times. It's only happened 12 times total. Only 4 times in the National League. excuse me, in 37, like I said, with Joe Medwick. In 22, Rogers Hornsby of the St. Louis Cardinals. And in 25, Hornsby did it in 22 and 1925 for the St. Louis Cardinals. And Chuck Klein did it for the Phillies in 1933. Only 12 times has this been done, and by only 10 players. Hornsby twice, of course, as I just mentioned. Ted Williams twice, 1942, 1947. Jimmy Fox won the Triple Crown for the American League in 1933. Of course, the same year that Klein won it in the National League. Now, that has only happened one time. It's the only time it's happened. 1933, when you had a Triple Crown winner in both leagues. Lou Gehrig did it in 1934. Mickey Mantle in 1956. Frank Robinson, 1966. Karl Yastrzemski, 1967, and Miguel Cabrera was the last person to achieve the Triple Crown in 2012 for Detroit. Now, currently, Goldie leads in average with a .335. Next is Fred, and these stats are as of Thursday. So Goldie leads in average at .335. Next is Freddie Freeman at .324. He is tied for the lead in RBIs at 105 with Pete Alonso, and he's second in home runs with 33. Kyle Schwarber has 36. So there's no doubt Paul Goldschmidt is what Paul Goldschmidt has meant to the Cardinals this year. His play on the field, what he's done in the clubhouse, I don't think it's going too far on a limb here when I say without Paul Goldschmidt, the Cardinals probably aren't even in the wild card race. Yes, I know. They've got Nolan Arenado, who's having a great season of his own. But, you know, you've had other players that contributed, like Nootbaar and Gorman and Edmund and as I call them, Butch and Sundance of the rotation in Wainwright and Michaelis. You mix in a little Helsley, some Palente, a pinch of Gio, a dab of Woodford, and Liberatore, and presto, you have a recipe that wins. But seriously, in my opinion, I don't know if anybody wants to back me up on this or agree with me, and frankly, I don't care. But it all revolves around Goldschmidt. And if he's not doing what he's doing, I don't think this team is where they're at. And now a lot of people on social media, I'm going to get a few people. Actually, let me stop for a second before I get into this. I look at social media, and I just wonder what it is that motivates some people to post what they post, because there's a few players that they're just dumping on big time, and some of it with a little bit of rationale, but I just don't understand. First one I'm talking about is Dakota Hudson. They're running this poor guy over the coals. Some are even calling him trash. And that's one thing I hate more than anything else. And I'm going to say this, and I don't care. If you are going to sit there and call a player trash or garbage because of how he's playing on the field in a particular game or a particular series or set of games, you're not a fan to me. I'm serious. And I am dead serious. Never would I call a player trash or garbage. They're playing a game you and I don't even have the fathoming, most of us, I should think, maybe not all, because there might be a former pro listening to this. The average fan has never played at this level or even anything close to this level. So to call a player trash or garbage is just simply ludicrous and childish, and people need to stop. All right, I'm off my soapbox. But here's my take on Dakota Hudson. Now, some are saying that he should never have been brought out of spring training, and this is probably very true. I'm going to give those people that comment that he probably never should have come out of spring training. Coming off the injury, even though he did pitch it in the end of last year and was in the playoffs, he probably should have started the year at Memphis just to kind of get his bearings. And because coming back from sometimes arm injuries like that, it's going to take you a year before you get the feel of the ball again, before you feel like your rhythm is the way it was before you got hurt. You know, but when it came down to it and you lost Flaherty, you weren't going to have Reyes at the start of the season, you had other question marks. He got pushed in as the fifth starter. And okay, well, that's fine. Put him in as the fifth starter. Well, then they decided they're going to make Hicks the fifth starter and stretch him out. So now that makes Hudson the fourth starter. Then Matz goes down. Now Hudson's got to be the number three guy. And he's not a number three starter right now. No, he's not. And I'll give you that for everybody. I will give you that he's not a number three starter. He's a number five at best right now, the way he is. But he's going to get better. I really don't think we need to worry about Hudson and say that he doesn't need to be here, he's trash, and he doesn't belong in the major leagues. The kid belongs, and he's going to prove it. It may not be until next year before we see him back to what his track was, as it was trending before the injury. But I really feel that Hudson... and a lot of the trouble, let me stop a second here too. A lot of the trouble I think with Hudson has been the lack of urgency from the front office when they had the pitching issues, when Flaherty went down, when they knew Reyes wasn't going to be able to pitch this year, when Matz went down. They kept trying to use the Band-Aid theory and hope for the best, and you know, Hudson's got to grow up sometime. And you know, the kid's coming off an injury. The kid, he's, and you're going to expect him to try and be like a seasoned veteran and just put up with it and make it work. I just don't see that happening to anybody, including Hudson. So, you know, I think probably since we've gotten Quintana and Montgomery, I think now the pressure is off of Hudson. So I think you might see him respond a little bit better. Also, I think if they do get Flaherty back, there's been talk of going to a six-man rotation, which I'm a little leery of, but that could help Hudson as well. So we'll see how that works. Speaking of Flaherty in the six-man rotation, people are split on the return of Jack Flaherty, and which kind of surprises me to some extent. I thought there'd be a little bit bigger group wanting him back, but many want him back in the rotation. But I think they're being overly optimistic in that they think he's going to be the Jack Flaherty we saw in 2019. And I don't think that's going to be the case. Others want to see him in the pen, and I think if he's going to come back to the club, that's where he should be. He should be in the pen as long relief, get himself worked back in until he gets his form back. I think he's got one more AAA start, or he's going to be starting in Memphis, a AAA start at Memphis before they bring him up. And I don't know if and when that'll happen. I'm sure he will be brought up, but I'm just not going to be guaranteeing that it's going to be any time in the immediate and or near future. It could be. I mean, he did well in his last AA start, so we'll see. He might have an in him for that AAA start. Speaking of calling up, September call-ups have started, and the two players that were brought up for St. Louis, right-handed pitcher James Nail was recalled from Memphis. And in an interesting move, and this may lead, some people suggest, it may lead to the return of Flaherty, is they selected outfielder Ben DeLuzzo from Memphis. They picked up his contract. So DeLuzzo had to move to the 40-man roster. So now the question is, if and when Flaherty comes back, what are they going to do? Well, then they've got to move somebody off the 40-man. DeLuzzo would be the guy that they would do that, because chances are he would pass through the waiver wire, because he would have to be designated for assignment to be taken off the 40-man, so he would pass through the waiver wire fairly easy. I mean, he's not a name like, I mean, if you bring up a Burleson, let's say, who's not on the 40-man, you put him on the 40-man, then you've got to DFA him, more than likely he's going to get snatched up by somebody. So I think that's one reason why DeLuzzo was brought up as in the call-up status. So, I mean, and that relates to, again, being Flaherty coming back. You know, that way you can safely bring Flaherty back without losing anybody to a certain extent. Now, a couple more players have been catching a lot of flack also, been Yadier Molina and Dylan Carlson. Now, I get it with Molina. I mean, the recent time off so he could be with his basketball team, it kind of rubs some people the wrong way, and I get that. But I think something else that people have to understand is, and, you know, I'm not trying to give excuses for Yachty, but when you're a team owner, you're expected to have certain responsibilities. Being there when your team is playing in a championship game, yeah, that's kind of one of those responsibilities. And I understand, though, that it was during a season when he's actually playing a game in a different sport, and I get that. Now, one of those games that he missed, he was going to be off anyway. It was his scheduled day off, so it's not like it was a big thing to miss him that day, although you didn't have him on the bench. So I understand that. You know, people think that he's putting himself first and not the Cardinals first. And I don't know if anybody watched the game tonight, Friday night, but on that double he hit, the look on his face and the excitement he had, yeah, he's still a Cardinal. I mean, he still cares about winning, and so, you know, get off his back, all right? Dylan Carlson, the other guy. Oh, well, let me get back to it. In kind of defense of Yachty also, I mean, can you imagine a team owner not being, like Jerry Jones, not being there if Dallas is playing in the Super Bowl? Can you imagine the DeWitts not showing up if the Cardinals are in the World Series? Now, put that in perspective. Just think about that for a second. Now for Carlson. You know, a lot was made that he was the sticky point in the rumored Juan Soto deal. And I say rumored because I'm still not sure there was anything there. But I would say there is validity to that, but not in the way people think. I mean, some people are thinking they wanted Carlson over Soto, that they said Carlson is meaning Carlson is better than Soto. Now, Carlson does have his upside defensively over Soto in certain respects. He's not the hitter Soto is. I mean, if you compare the stats, the numbers tell the tale. Soto, 248, 409, 474 with 24 home runs, 52 RBIs, 75 strikeouts, 113 walks, 46 extra base hits in 541 plate appearances. Carlson, 243, 317, 391, 8 home runs, 39 RBIs, 81 strikeouts, 37 walks, 32 extra base hits in 426 at-bats. Now, Soto does have over 100 more plate appearances, so, you know, you kind of take the RBIs and possibly the extra base hits factor that in, as they say, because then he's got 115 more plate appearances than Carlson does. So I kind of looked into that a little bit further, and Carlson is averaging one RBI every 10.9 plate appearances. Soto, one RBI every 10.4 plate appearances. So the RBIs, actually, even though Soto has more RBIs, they're hitting them at about the same rate. So that's a wash. Extra base hits. Carlson has one every 13.3 plate appearances. Now, Soto's a little better, one extra base hit every 11.7, but they're still within a couple, you know, within what, four games? One every four games they get an extra base hit. You know, I can live with that too. Now, hits. Carlson hits versus his plate appearances. He's averaging 215. So if you use plate appearances instead of at-bats, he's averaging 215. If you use plate appearances instead of at-bats for Soto, he's averaging 192. So, you know, Carlson does have his upside. Plus his speed on the base paths helps him also in the outfield. And now, yes, you'd gain offense with Soto, and especially in the power department with the home runs. But you would lose in defense. In five seasons as an outfielder, Soto is a negative 10 RDS, defensive runs saved. While Carlson is, in three seasons as an outfielder, is an 8, or plus 8 on DRS. Now, this year the numbers have flipped a little bit. In the outfield for 2022, Soto is a negative 3, exclusively playing right field, while Carlson is a 2, splitting time between center field and right field. Now, his numbers are consistent in center field with what his career number has been, which is an 8, but his numbers in right field this year are down to a negative 6. So that would indicate some to trade Carlson for Soto, because Soto would have been the better right fielder at a negative 3 versus a negative 6. Still both negative, but you know. but the defensive numbers are center field is what tells the tale here. Because the Cardinals dealt Harrison Bader. And everybody said, well, they didn't deal him until after they could. No. That's blatantly an inaccurate statement. Yes, the deal for Bader was made after Soto was traded to San Diego. But that deal is probably in the works for at least a good 3 to 4 days. Which means they knew they were dealing Harrison Bader. Okay? And if they're dealing Harrison Bader, they had to think of center field. Carlson is the natural choice for the center field spot. He played there before. He plays good there. He's got a good number. He's got good numbers in center field. So he made it as the obvious choice to link him to center field, trade Bader. So if you want to think about it, Carlson was not the main cog or the main issue with the Soto trade. He was one of the main factors in the Bader trade for Montgomery. So think about that way, and you look at it. I'm not saying that we shouldn't have tried to go after Soto, and if we'd have given up Carl for Soto, it would have been a disaster. No, I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is, while going after Soto, if we could, I'll put it this way: if we could have given up Newt Barr for Soto, I'm in. I'm all in. If we give up Newt Barr, Donovan, and I don't know, a couple of minor league pitchers, pick a couple, not named Libertor or Woodford or Thompson, and I'm good with that. To do the deal that they had to make for Soto would have cost the outfield dearly, I think, on the defensive side. You know, plus Carlson is still fairly young himself, so I don't think you have an issue with there. It's just my take on that. Finally, I want to get to Albert Pujols. Will he make 700 home runs? Now, if you would have asked me this at the All-Star break, I would have said he'd be lucky to catch A-Rod. But right now, he's sitting at 694 home runs, 31 games left. Now, in the first half of the season, he had 6 home runs and 173 plate appearances, one every 19 trips to the plate. Since the All-Star break, he has 9 home runs and 87 plate appearances, or one every 9 trips to the plate. So even though my math skills are not the greatest, I did have to use a calculator for this. There are 31 games left going into Friday night. If Albert plays 16 of those games, that's roughly 48 to 50 possible plate appearances. Okay? Now I'm saying if he plays, if he's in the starting lineup, okay? Obviously, if he in the other 15 games he comes in to pinch hit 3 or 4 of those games, then it'll go over 50. If he's doing it the 1 for every 9 trips to the plate, that gives him about 699 or 700 home runs. So he's right on that cusp. If he starts 16 games and does what he does in plate appearance wise, he's right on that borderline part. So I'm not going to say he's going to make 700. I'm not going to say he's not going to make 700. I'm just going to say with as much confidence as I can, he will pass A-Rod. I believe that. He'll be at 697. He's going to be somewhere between 697 and 700. I can guarantee you that. To say that he's going to join Bonds and Aaron and Ruth in that rare air of 700, I'm hoping so. I think he's got a shot. Is he going to do it? I don't know. And if he does, pass A-Rod or hit 700, I'm hoping he does it September 16th or October 21st. Actually, I'd like to see him pass A-Rod September 16th and then on October 20 or October 1st, not 21st, October 1st, pass or get 700, because I plan on being in attendance both days, and I want to be there when it happens. I know that's personally selfish on my part, but hey. Now, for the team as a whole, I thought at the beginning of the season they would compete for division title and possibly win the division. But playing at the level they are right now and doing well against teams like the Yankees, they swept the Yankees, the Braves, they took 2 out of 3. This team just might have what it takes, especially since the addition of Montgomery and Quintana. You got Albert kicking in the way he's kicking in, Goldie with his Triple Crown season, Newt Barr. I mean, Newt Barr, 2 home runs in the last 2 days. I don't know what else you can say about this kid. I love the kid. And, I think if anything, maybe he was the reason they didn't pick up Soto. I'm just saying. I think they may have enough to bring home the big prize. We'll have to see if they can get number 12 for that. I'll tell you what, that's it for me tonight, boys and girls. So please check out GatewaySportsCity.com and check out my website, Talking Sports, talkingsports-otb-gcs.onpodium.com. Subscribe there to be notified of upcoming podcasts when they're posted. Hit the show up on Twitter, TSOTBGCS, or hit me up on Twitter, at TOSTBGCS, or hit me up on Twitter at BigD_GCS. And stay tuned as I continue to tweak the show. I mean, I'm looking for different things there. And I said something about a guest host, or not a guest host, but a co-host. I'll say guest host, too. If anybody is interested in getting into podcasting and wanting to maybe do a couple episodes with me and bounce them and be my number two, let me know. Get in contact with me. We'll make that happen. We can make this work, and we'll see what we can do. I want to make this as a good experience for you people as well as myself. And, you know, I love doing this show, but I can't do it without you, the sports fans and listeners. So please let me know what's going on. Let me find out from you guys what you want to hear, what you like to hear, what I'm doing right, what I'm doing wrong. Tell me that too. I'm a big boy. I can take the criticism. So anyway, with that in mind, so keeping with tailgate traditions, I started this show. And old-time college football fans are going to know this name. Some of you others, younger people, may not. But in the words of Leonard Post-Posty, see you later, fans. Get me out of here, Percy.
Thanks again for joining us, and you have been listening to Talking Sports on the Bleachers. Here's hoping you have a great sports day.